We didn't want to show any bias towards Canelo or Golovkin. We could have played Seven Nation Army. We could have played Mexico Lindo. But instead, we went with the Wolf Pack to open up the podcast. I got Rollins here with me. He's planned a whole slew of things for us to talk about when it comes to Canelo Golovkin. This podcast is all Canelo Golovkin. And let's just start on a general sense. Is or do you believe that Canelo was actually on the sauce?
I don't know. I don't think there's any way to know. So I actually don't really have an opinion on that. I mean, I think you can make an argument either way, and it's kind of pointless. And there, no one will ever, like, there's only maybe five people in the world that ever actually know, and I'm never going to have a personal conversation with any of them. So
I start off by saying that the question really is, does it matter? And we'll get into that as we start to, you know, discuss the fight. But I just want to go back to that, because this rematch is four months late. It should have happened in May, or is it? Yeah, that's 4 months. It's 4 months ago. But now we're getting it in September. And so let's get right into this. So the first match ends in a draw. We have the 118-110 scorecard, which has become like the subject to talk about from that fight. And really, should we have spent all this time talking about the 118-110 scorecard? Do you think that really like hurt the hype that could have gone into this fight? Like, much has been made about that card, but the fact is that the fight was a draw. And do you think that was like the draw was the right outcome?
I did. I thought Golovkin won. I scored it for Golovkin, but I think there would definitely not have been the same hysteria if it had been 114-114 on two scorecards, and then there was the one for Golovkin. I think people would have still viewed it as kind of typical Canelo scoring, where he gets the benefit of the doubt, just like he did with Lara. And to a certain extent, that fight with Trout, where the scorecards I thought were way wider than they should have been. And so I think that would have been basically the story, but it wouldn't have been as big of a deal. And it wouldn't have cast such a shadow over the rematch. And there's actually a certain outcome where the controversy of one having one ridiculous pro Canelo scorecard could have sold the rematch even more, because the narrative would be that Golovkin knows that he can't win. He's totally getting screwed. And you kind of work up the Golovkin fanboys while also having the Canelo fans really defensive, because they know that it really was a close fight, even though almost everyone scored it for Golovkin, or at least the overwhelming majority had it Golovkin or a draw. But the point we're at now, I think that it has kind of just become a tired narrative because of the delay and everything else. I think people are really just sick of a lot of the storylines that have been kind of overcooked.
Do you think that, because I was thinking about this, if because Canelo took the heel role in the first fight, it's hard to be the heel when you're against Golovkin, who's been beloved by all, almost unanimously loved by all boxing fans since he made his debut on HBO. And whether that's something special Golovkin has, or the perfect marketing or ploy by HBO, whatever, the fact is everyone loves him. And if Canelo wasn't in that heel role, though, do you think maybe that scorecard would have been less of a big deal? But because Canelo's the A side, where the money stands to, or boxing stands to benefit at every level if Canelo wins, and, you know, he's basically the golden child of boxing. If he wasn't in that position, do you think that would have been such a big deal to have that scorecard?
I kind of refute the narrative that Canelo went into the first fight as a heel. I think he went in as he did a really good job of, from the beginning of his career, from the Floyd fight, from a lot of resentment from people thinking that he was being overpushed and he was a creation of promotion, through the difficult fights that he went through, whether it was Lara or Trout or Cotto. I think that he actually did a really good job of babyfacing himself. But to the point of your question, if let's say the fight had been edged for Canelo in most people's minds, but Golovkin got one scorecard that was crazy for him and it turned out to be a split draw, do I think it would have been the same outrage? No, I don't think it would have been the same outrage for the same reason that people don't get extremely upset at someone who gets a lucky break who is not at the top of the food chain. I think the inherent status of privilege that comes with being the big money person, the person at the top of the ladder financially, and then getting the breaks that go your way and the history of the breaks that have gone Canelo's way, or at least the perceived breaks that have gone Canelo's way, obviously all contributed to the massive, I would call overreaction to that truly terrible scorecard.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good scorecard. I mean, even if you really felt that way, you should have at least known, like, okay, it's close enough that if I turn in something super wide here, because whether you think Golovkin won or you thought Canelo won, you can't walk away from that fight thinking that was a wide, conclusive decision for one guy. The other guy clearly won. It was a close fight. There was many swing rounds. And it's almost an insult, really, to both guys that you would have that opinion that it was a super wide decision for either guy. And I understand most people, they think Golovkin won, but I'm not going to sit here and listen to anyone say, well, Golovkin won that fight 9-3, 8-4, whatever, and just talk like Canelo was an absolute jabroni for 12 rounds, because that just wasn't what we saw. And if you ask Golovkin would probably say the same thing. I think, you know, you said it a bit, and I would just go a little bit further into it. Like, you know, when you're the A side, when you're the guy that everyone, you know, from a financial point of view or a business perspective, it makes sense for you to win and people want you to win. It's easy for people to come up with conspiracy theories. And I think that's kind of what people did, where Adelaide Bird turns in a card, which is, you know, questionable. And the first thing people immediately go to is they start coming up with conspiracy theories for why that might have been, you know, just leaving out the most likely scenario that she just messed up. If there was a conspiracy, honestly, if you really believe that there's conspiracies like judging and stuff, and I'm not saying that there aren't, but like if there really was going to be one, we would have seen it with Canelo not getting a suspension and that fight still going through in May. But, you know, they don't have the weight to pull on. I don't really want to go into the whole drug testing thing. I think we'll go into it, but not right now. I think that ties into a specific factor around the fight. I'll ask this question. Who do you think is more likely to make an adjustment from the previous fight?
More likely to make an adjustment, I think, is going to be Golovkin. I think that Golovkin is going to recognize that while most people thought he won, basically, I think he made more mistakes that were a product of his control, things that were under his control. I think the way he fought the first three rounds, he was a bit surprised by how Canelo approached the fight and was not nearly as aggressive or in his groove as I think he will attempt to be going into the second fight, where he's not so taken aback perhaps by the big stage or surprised by the game plan of Canelo or whatever the reason was, that his fighting style was a little bit different early in the fight. I felt like he basically only threw jabs for the first couple rounds, and so he really put himself at a little bit of a disadvantage by falling behind early. I think that he'll deploy more of an aggressive power punching game plan and a more punch variety. I thought his punch variety was a little bit stunted, particularly early in the fight last time, and I think he'll learn from that. And he'll recognize that also, as much as he doesn't want to believe it the first time, in his mind, he'll recognize that winning 7-5 is not going to be enough, or at least that will be the approach that he takes. That if there's, he can't let the first three rounds go slow starting and then hope to get the benefit out, etc. Like, I don't think he'll go balls to the wall and try to go for the knockout no matter what, because he thinks he can't win on the scorecards. But I think he knows he needs to be convincing, and he knows that there are a lot of things that he didn't do that he could benefit him and make it a more convincing victory the next time.
I'm going to counter some things that you said. First, Golovkin's 36 years old. And you and I have both watched a lot of boxing. And I can't remember seeing a 36-year-old fighter make serious adjustments to their game prior to entering a fight. Now, we could bring up Floyd and say, well, Floyd...
I would say Floyd Mayweather, yeah.
Floyd, but Floyd's adjustments came in fight. Floyd Mayweather is also one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I'm here to tell you that Gennady Golovkin does not enter that conversation. Golovkin fought a similar style that he fought against Canelo, against David Lemieux. And we all know now that David Lemieux, he didn't need to fight that way. David Lemieux could have, Golovkin could have walked right into him and he would have got him out of there probably quicker. We wouldn't have had to worry about anything from Lemieux because Lemieux's just not good. Also on the undercard. Danny Jacobs. Golovkin tried to be Golovkin in that fight. And when he realized he couldn't be Golovkin, he transformed into a different fighter, letting Danny Jacobs into that fight and making it closer than it probably should have been. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from Jacobs either. Jacobs is a really good fighter, and there's a reason why Golovkin changed his style, and it was because he was in there with a good fighter in Danny Jacobs. The first fight around, I'll give you, Golovkin was defensive and tentative early in that fight. He turned it around through activity and a combination of Canelo's stamina decreasing to the point that Golovkin was able to win on activity. And by the end of the fight, Canelo got his second win and got himself back into that fight, making it the close fight that it actually was. So while I think you made a really good point, I do think that Golovkin made a lot of mistakes, but I also wonder if those were actually mistakes, or is that how Golovkin performs when he's in there with guys he perceives as a threat? Because we've seen him fight the same way against three opponents. Lemieux, Jacobs, and Canelo. He fought very similarly in all three fights. And I'm
wondering...
I don't think
that he fought... I think with Lemieux, he fought specifically behind his jab and was very deliberate in the early rounds. I think Jacobs' movement and switch hitting and athleticism and quick feet really gave him problems. And I think in the Canelo fight, after three rounds, he made an adjustment and started rolling downhill and being a lot more aggressive. And yes, obviously Canelo's lack of movement due to stamina issues created that situation. But I don't think saying Golovkin fought differently for three straight fights because he was facing a threat is really a true statement. I think Golovkin made an adjustment against Canelo, and if he has determined that Canelo can't hurt him, which, I mean, watch the last three rounds of that fight. When Canelo got his second win, did Golovkin look like he did in the first three rounds of that fight? No. He was totally fine standing in the pocket and taking those shots. And yes, maybe he lost those rounds, but if the last three rounds of the first fight are the first three rounds of the second fight, do you really think that Canelo is going to last all 12 with the same amount of stamina? I think that, like, the adjustment that Golovkin made, he made in fight too. And I think that that is another adjustment that he'll carry into the second fight.
I'm not confident of that.
Sorry for interrupting you, but I just think misunderstanding my point a little. I don't think that the way that Golovkin fought in some of those other fights is necessarily as relevant to this fight as people would want to believe.
Well, if you're taking it literal that he'll fight the same way, it's not what I mean. I just mean that the way Golovkin approaches opponents that he perceives as being a threat is very different from the guy who showed up to fight Willie Monroe or the guy who showed up to fight Kell Brook. And I don't think you're making this, but I want to make this clear because, you know, it must be said. But is it possible? Like, I don't think it's possible that Golovkin's adjustment means this becomes a Curtis Stevens fight where he just blows him out. I don't think that there's an adjustment for that to happen. I don't think there's an adjustment for Golovkin to absolutely just whitewash Canelo. I don't think that that adjustment is there because Canelo's too good for that. Now, obviously, anything can happen. He can knock him out. He could catch him, whatever. But you run that risk with any fight between any two guys that are both really good. I just don't think that adjustment can happen that way. And I think I'm skeptical that Golovkin can make that adjustment to retool his entire style. I think if he fights the way he fought in the last three rounds of that fight, we end up with a very close fight once again. Because as you said, very likely Canelo won those three rounds. I don't agree with that, but I think he had an argument for at least two of them. But again, even so, those were close rounds. Whether you liked Canelo or Golovkin in those rounds, they were close. So that adjustment, I'm not confident that adjustment is like the one that wins it. But that's not actually the question. I just said who's the more likely to make an adjustment. And I think, you know, I'll make the case for Canelo. Okay, I don't want this to turn into a "you're right, I'm wrong" conversation. We can do that.
Oh, absolutely. I could make the argument for Canelo too. So yeah, by all means, go ahead.
Yeah, I think
you want to make one.
I mean, we could do this first take style, but we need a little more planning so we can. We need to know how to counter each other, but we didn't plan like that. But the case for Canelo is that Canelo, throughout his entire career, he's constantly evolved his style for better or worse. You know. Canelo, you know, I think there's a lot of people that didn't watch Canelo when he was young. I think there's a lot of people that didn't see Canelo until maybe the Matthew Hatton fight or maybe when he came to Showtime, which is kind of shocking given how big of a star Canelo already was and the numbers he put up on HBO at that time. But Canelo was kind of a plotter. He was kind of a guy who was more of a boxer puncher. And he's transformed himself into a counterpuncher who's actually kind of slick, and he can throw in combination. He's really good in combination, but he's been able to transition from your typical Mexican style fighter into what we see now. And I think after his tough fights, we've seen evolution, and he learned a lot from the Floyd fight. You can tell like that he absorbed a lot of what he got from Floyd. Does he have the athleticism to pull it off? I don't think so. Certainly doesn't have the stamina that Floyd has, but he's learned a lot. And so I think heading into this fight, there's a lot that Canelo could do. I think Canelo could make it a little more obvious. I think Canelo could look at other fights and realize that, hey, if I just do what I do really well in the last minute of the round and preserve myself, I could basically cheat my way and overcome what is a consistent problem for him, which is his stamina. I don't think Canelo is going to knock out Golovkin, and I don't think he needs to, but I certainly think if he keeps himself from getting trapped against the ropes or keeps Golovkin from cutting him off, I think Canelo could make this a boring, it would be boring. He could make it boring, but he could also outbox Golovkin for 12 rounds, because if you watch that fight, the better guy at counterpunching and stuff is clearly Canelo. Do you have any other perspective? You could just say what you typed.
Yeah, I had a throat issue there for a second. Adjustments that Canelo can make, I think that particularly in the opening rounds of the first fight, I think that the power punches that he threw when he was standing in the pocket, he was attempting to really hurt Golovkin and see if he could take those punches. And also, I think he was trying to prove a point that he could punch with him. And I think that he certainly, I mean, he's never been known for stamina, but he certainly hurt his ability to last through the middle rounds of that fight by expending too much energy while he was on offense. And so, as far as adjustment Canelo can make, I think he absolutely can be smarter about how he, when he's countering and when he's exploiting the hand speed advantage that he has in the pocket, he can not put everything that he needs to on every single punch, and then be able to not only with flashy combinations win three rounds and then have to coast for five rounds before he can start fighting again, but fight smarter in spurts round by round and not necessarily not be worried about getting Golovkin's respect from the first round on. I think he can fight just a little bit smarter on offense, where he doesn't have to expend as much energy even while he exploits his hand speed advantage.
Well, he wouldn't have to do that, hopefully, for Canelo's sake, because he's already fought him before. He doesn't need to get his respect because, I mean, if he's smart, he'll realize, oh yeah, he knows what I can do already as far as my punching power goes, so I don't really need to spend time getting his respect because I can assume it now. and therefore I can probably not, you know, burn a bunch of energy early on by, you know, trying to hit him with a shot that dazes him or something. I think.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go on. I'm going to change this. I'm going to bring up something else. So if you
I was just saying, going into the first fight, we knew that Golovkin threw with power, but it was kind of hard to gauge his hand speed relative to Canelo, and Canelo, therefore, like in reverse, it was hard to gauge their hand speed. And I think how obvious it was, basically one and a half rounds into the first fight, that Canelo had way superior hand speed. I think there is an adjustment to be made there that is valuable.
One adjustment that both of them could make that would serve them both well, but also make for a more, I think it'd be a more entertaining fight, is if both guys spent less time trying to prove to the other that they can take each other's power. And what I mean by that is, like, if you notice in exchanges, both guys would take a shot and they would step back and shake their heads. And it's like, okay, how about you counter? If you're well enough that you can just smile and shake your head at them, how about you go to the body? And I think this is something we haven't brought up yet, but this is the adjustment that Golovkin needs to make. And it was totally out of character in the first fight that Golovkin was not going to the body. And I think that's a big adjustment for Golovkin to make, going to the body. And, you know, you could say, well, why didn't he go to the body? Well, he didn't want to expose himself for the headshot up top from Canelo. And if that's the case, then that's an adjustment to make. And it does, you know, there's a way to throw body shots without totally exposing yourself. If you really want to, like, this is probably, like, you're going to think, okay, this is not a great example, but heavyweight boxing is a good place to look because guys in the heavyweight division don't typically throw body shots. But if you look at Wilder or even Joshua, the way they get their body shots in, they do it with minimal risk. And I think Golovkin, I mean, if he's not going to commit to the body attack, fine. You got to still go to the body and you got to do something down there. This Canelo did go to the body, but I think that there's more work for him to do for both of them. And one could make the argument that a lot of Golovkin's stoppages and knockouts have come from starting with body work. You have any other adjustments that you think either I could make, or you want to say that which guy you think is not going to make an adjustment?
No.
Okay, well, who needs to win more?
Who needs to win more?
Yeah.
Golovkin.
Why do you think that?
And the reason that Golovkin needs to win more is because if Golovkin never beats Canelo, and in particular, I mean, assuming we're talking about if he doesn't win, he's going to lose. Golovkin is gone through the prime of his career. And yes, there will be people that say that it's because he got old. And that may even be true. But when people look back on Golovkin's run at middleweight, they'll look at his resume and say he beat absolutely nobody. And so, yes, he will have a spot in the pantheon of history of boxing. Yeah, but he'll have a spot and he'll have a reign. And there will be people that, I mean, rightfully say that he was definitely avoided by most of the top guys or guys that would have added name value to his resume. But ultimately, it's going to mean that he never beat anyone that's going to be of historical relevance at all in his peak. And for that reason, he needs this win on his resume. And that's the reason that was the whole story of the chase of the Canelo fight. And other than money, it's the only reason that fans wanted it, is because this was the win that was supposed to get Golovkin validation. And yes, the majority of people think he won last time, but history shows that doesn't really matter. What matters is that he didn't win.
Right.
And if he doesn't win this time, it won't really matter that history, that people in the moment or people with like true knowledge of what happened might say it's because he aged him out. It won't matter. Golovkin will never have beaten a fighter of historical relevance his entire career.
So I don't think they're on pace to become Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler, because if they were that popular and they remembered for decades, then fine. Maybe we remember that, you know, this fight. Okay. But the reality is at this point, neither guy goes down that as one of those two figures. And this is similar to the position Sergio Martinez found himself in, where he needed something, and it's part of the bad thing I guess we'll say about, like, you didn't come to TV till late. Golovkin's 36. He made his debut on HBO in 2012. Or I might be wrong, but it was around 2012. So that was six years ago. So he's 30 years old. Already 30 years old. Imagine right now if Terrence Crawford made his HBO debut. That'd be nuts. And then the timeline that you have to ascend to that next level of greatness, you know, it gets like, you need to, you're on the fast track. And you're totally right. Golovkin does need this win to put himself there. Now, if that's not his target and he doesn't care about that, then who cares? You know, he wins, he loses, doesn't matter. He gets paid. I don't think Golovkin's like that. I don't think he's trying to cash out 100%. Sure, we'd be stupid if we said that that wasn't true, that Golovkin didn't want the Canelo fight because this is what stood to get him paid. Because the reality is, if he wanted to truly go down as a great middleweight, I'm sorry, but Canelo's not the fight. It's Jermall Charlo. Take the youngest, baddest guy around. That's Jermall Charlo right now at middleweight. And go knock him out. Go show that you're better than him. And then take the next one. Because right now we know what Canelo is. And right now, is it unfair to say that Canelo's popularity exceeds his skill?
Was that a rhetorical question?
No, this isn't First Take. We do rhetorical questions. Or we, no. No, no. First Take's rule is no rhetorical questions. I'll ask rhetorical questions, but no, I did want you to answer.
I think it's fair to say that his popularity exceeds what he has perhaps accomplished. At least certainly at middleweight.
For sure.
But the counter to what you said about Jermall Charlo is, like, I don't disagree with the premise, but the fact of the matter is the fight is Canelo versus Golovkin. So who needs to win this fight more? Golovkin losing to Canelo puts Golovkin, it lowers him below Sergio Martinez historically. And nobody is going to remember Sergio Martinez in 20 years other than me, you, and the 14 other people in this boxing, like, subreddit.
Yeah, I was about to take some exception there, but you're on the money there. I agree with that because Sergio beat Chavez Jr. Now, history will tell us that Chavez Jr. was an absolute jabroni. And actually beating him means very little in terms of, we have a conversation 20 years from now and we're like, oh yeah, Sergio Martinez was good because he beat Chavez Jr. No, beating Chavez Jr. gets him in the conversation in 20 years so that you can talk about how Sergio Martinez would fare against Jermall Charlo Jr. or whatever, whoever we're talking about at the time. Certainly has nothing to do with beating him. Now, and I agree with you. I think Golovkin needs to win more. But we could both agree that boxing needs Canelo to win. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the more beneficial outcome for boxing as a sport on the whole is Canelo winning.
Right. Why is that?
Because he is the younger guy. He's the guy with the more future, or with the longer future, with more time to both add to his legacy and pass along the credibility that this win gets him. He'll have another 5, 7, 8 years to fight the other guys that you mentioned. I mean, the other relevant guys in the division, and whether he wins or loses, I hate the analogy of, like, the mentioning box rec on this podcast, but accruing those points and so that they can be spread out to other people is valuable to the sport of boxing, both commercially and popularity wise and credibility wise. Because realistically, regardless of how many more times Golovkin fights, there was, if we look at undefeated fighters or fighters that retire before they pass along whatever, whatever status they have in the sport without losing, that is bad for the sport on the whole. There can, like, the example is Floyd Mayweather. And you can undoubtedly argue the positives that Floyd Mayweather has brought to boxing, and particularly commercially and popularity-wise. But it's undoubtedly true that if he had lost, if he had put over, to use wrestling terminology, if he had put over Keith Thurman or Errol Spence or Terence Crawford at the end of his career, it would have also been good for boxing. And the fact that he never put anyone over, like Oscar put him over, is detrimental to the sport. And so just through that lens, the best thing for boxing at large, in my opinion, would be Canelo winning.
Right.
Although there is an argument to be made the other way, for sure.
Well, I don't think you could make the argument that basically mapping this reasoning onto Golovkin, because the reality is Golovkin's longevity in the sport, based off of his fighting, style, based off of what we've already seen, I don't think we can ride Golovkin until he's 40 at middleweight.
But would you like me to make the argument the other way, or do you want to talk?
I can
make the argument for Golovkin winning being better for the sport, for sure.
Yeah, let's hear that, because it's probably wrong. But it's an argument.
So there is a segment of the boxing population, the casual fan, whichever one that was probably interested a small in this segment. Fight. We'll see what based on the pay-per-view buys. But if it does 1.5 million or over 1 million pay-per-view buys, yes, it'll largely be the Mexican audience that are Canelo fans. But there's a large portion of that are going to be sports fans that were viewing Canelo as the heel and view the PED suspension as bad for the sport and hurting its credibility and making it easier for casual sports fans to be turned off. And so there is an argument to be made that Golovkin winning and vindicating the clean athlete, and then Golovkin, and inevitably Jermall Charlo is the mandatory contender for the WBC belt, or whoever else, he's not going to retire off of, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. But there is an argument to be made that the best result for boxing would be Golovkin beating the guy who was suspended for drugs and then putting over someone else like Jermall Charlo or Danny Jacobs in a rematch, or whoever is the next young guy on the upcoming.
We both know Jaime Munguia. The reason...
Okay. Are you Jim Lampley? Sorry, am I talking to Jim Lampley?
How did you know? Oh, I almost let slip a really bad, bad, bad joke. I think you can guess what I was going to say. But
that's what post-production is for.
Yeah, but I'm going to just keep drinking and making mistakes. And I'll say that Canelo needs to win more, because I think we've laid out Golovkin's side of things. But Canelo needs to win more, not just because if Golovkin wins the fight, very likely he's got a couple more fights left. What we know in boxing is that fights that you get excited about can take a couple years, sometimes 6 years, to truly reach the point where you're chomping at the bit to watch that fight. Fights that will crack 2 million pay-per-view buys. And on this timeline, Golovkin does not factor in because of his age. Again, I've laid out the case. I just don't see Golovkin, especially at middleweight, especially with the style he fights in, lasting until he's 40 years old. I mean, it'd be pretty miraculous, but he ain't Tom Brady. He ain't Floyd Mayweather. I don't think that's happening. With Canelo, as you said, not only just the box rec points that get to be dispersed, but also the attention that Canelo brings. Let's say he fights Charlo and he beats Charlo. Well, Charlo is elevated, and Charlo then goes off to have fights that mean something. So if we look at Floyd, Floyd brought a ton of attention to the welterweight division. He fights guys, and their next fights, by nature of being in the same division, the fights around him are more important. And also, when those guys, who Floyd goes and beats up, when they go fight, their fights mean more than they would have without fighting Floyd. Case in point, Robert Guerrero kept getting main event spots that we all know he doesn't really deserve, but for some reason he got them, and for some reason people watched them. And this is a real good example, okay? this past weekend, who were the two best active welterweights in the world? Keith Thurman, or sorry, I said active, and then the first thing I say is Keith Thurman. Spence and Crawford, okay? What's the fight we all want to see? Spence and Crawford. Okay. So why do we care so much about Garcia versus Porter? Well, because one of those guys might fight Spence, or one of those guys might fight Crawford. And so we give that extra attention than maybe we would have. Like, if this was cruiserweight, would you care if the number four and number five guys were fighting? Not as much.
No, I'm not going to be watching the WBSS cruiserweight tournament on DAZN.
But that's not for four and five. That's like for 8 and 12. Just kidding. Just kidding. I got a PM today. Someone was not happy about one of said that we're biased against Top Rank on the podcast, which is, you know, not true. I went out of my way to praise Top Rank on the last episode, but we'll save my own personal problems for another podcast. But I think Canelo winning the fight allows what you said, people to be put over and things to be distributed. Because, I mean, let's be real, Canelo's not retiring undefeated from this point out. He's going to lose again. It's bound to happen. Canelo needs to win because I think that there are a lot of fans in boxing that might be a little upset with the drug test result. But if Canelo wins and everything's on the up and up, he's passed all his drug tests, well, he gains some credibility back. And those people maybe who they were a little upset about Canelo, well, they come back and say, okay, well, he did it the right way and he beat Golovkin. I mean, I really just think it's that simple. It's a numbers game over time that Golovkin doesn't have because he's older. The reverse of this question is, who would be hurt more by a loss? Who do you think? I think it's pretty obvious based off of what you already said, but you may want to just go through it one more time.
Well, I think there's, like, just like I said, I think there's an argument to be made for both sides. Obviously, Canelo taking a loss, particularly if it's a significantly worse performance than it was 12 months ago, the inferences that people will make based on the drug testing failure will hurt him tremendously, obviously, I think, with a large portion of fans. But I'm of the opinion that Golovkin is hurt worse by the loss, because Golovkin is never, he's not going to get a Charlo fight after this. Why would somebody, if Golovkin gets outpointed in this fight and it's a close fight or a relatively competitive fight, Golovkin has some name value, yes, but he does not have enough name value, and he doesn't have enough natural opponents or enough time left on his clock to still be a competitive middleweight to rebuild. Whereas Canelo, even if he takes a bad loss, he's got another 7 or 8 years to make up for that and to reinvent his career.
I think it's Golovkin, but not for what you said. I think, and you're going to have to roll with this one, but based off of what we've seen in the lead up to this fight and what Canelo or the Golovkin quotes that he's given, Golovkin is taking this fight really personally. Golovkin is putting a lot of himself into this fight. You know, typically we've seen that Golovkin treats this like, hey, this is a sport, anyone can get hurt, blah, blah, blah. But it's mostly like business for him. And it's no longer business. He's like personally slighted by the fact that this fight is taking place 4 months later than it should have, for whatever reasons. And I think that if Golovkin loses, part of what makes him Golovkin is going to die. I think mentally he'd probably be broken. I think he'd lose his love and passion for the sport, because I believe in his mind, he knows that something was up in that first fight. That the justification for why he didn't get that fight, it comes crashing down. And that's not to say it's true. It's certainly, I don't think it would be true. And if he loses another close fight to Golovkin, to Canelo, I don't think any less of Golovkin. These guys are pretty evenly matched. But I think it's similar to Danny Garcia's loss this past weekend, where Garcia, you could tell at the end of the fight, was really hurt that he didn't get the decision. And I'm sure in Garcia's mind, this is the second time where he's like on the receiving end of an injustice based off of how he felt he did against Thurman. Whether or not that's accurate, that's irrelevant, because sometimes the results don't matter to them. They were the ones in the ring. And I really think that a loss for Golovkin would really damage like him and who he sees himself as a fighter. You have any counters to that? Anything you want to add?
No, I see your point of view. I think both guys have a lot to lose by losing.
So oh, for sure.
We both made some different reasonings for as to why, but I don't really have much more to say about it.
I do think we should just go a little bit more. Like, you said it perfectly, but you kind of glossed over it. The reason why it's so important for Canelo to win and he cannot lose this fight is because of the built-in excuse that, I mean, he could lose for any number of reasons, and they would totally be valid reasons. Like, legitimately, a close family member could die the night of the fight and he goes into the ring all messed up. But you and I both know that the justification for his loss, who he becomes, what becomes validated in the event that he loses, is that he was cheating and he no longer was able to cheat anymore. And he didn't get the benefit of the doubt, didn't get things, all, as we mentioned earlier, all the conspiracy things that revolve around a Canelo win in the event of a close fight, all of those things become true. And it destroys, it undermines everything he's accomplished. He's got a lot at stake here, as both do. As far as like whose future's damaged more, probably Canelo. Whose future, like if you look at what they stand to gain from winning this fight, as far as like, you know, future earnings and more fights and all that stuff, it's Canelo only by virtue of him being younger. So that's more to the, you know, who would be like, who would be hurt more by a loss in Canelo's favor? Do you think that the judges are going to show any bias, or do you think that they might overcompensate and be a little more generous to Golovkin this time around?
I think that is a common narrative, and it's like a common, like it's human nature to feel like he may get the benefit of the doubt for like karmic reasons. But I think it's also a bit of like, it's a bit of a fanboy idea. Or it's just a bit of like you're undermining the credibility of the judges. Like, do you think that there's a conspiracy going on, or do you think that there are three judges sitting ringside who judge the fight as best they can from their point of view, who won that round, and added up to 12 rounds?
Or the flip side is, you think the judges were sitting there really trying to screw things up?
Yeah, I don't think all those guys have personal and professional pride, and it's not like this is a hidden palette. Everyone knows who, I mean, Adelaide Byrd.
Anybody, you think she wants the ridicule that she's gotten, yeah, or being suspended?
Not. Yeah. And like, obviously I don't, comes with the territory. If you have a high profile job and fuck up epically, then you get the backlash that comes with it. So it's not to say that people shouldn't be upset if someone has an awful scorecard, but I think it's kind of ridiculous to assume that anyone is trying to do anything in their job other than the best they can. Now, with that being said, the argument is it only human nature to all of those judges, all three judges will have known what happened in the first fight. And so if you want to say that subconsciously, they may, if there is a close round and they know that Canelo got a lot of close rounds in the previous fight, might they side with Golovkin? It's possible, but I think like, casting that, that's like projecting. That's projecting what you think you might feel onto someone else. And so after the fact, that may be a conclusion that people come to, which is there's a lot of close rounds, and maybe the judges subconsciously gave him the benefit of the doubt. But I think like in a prediction podcast, I think it's kind of, we can bring up that point, but I think it's kind of out of line or stepping over the line for us to speculate as to if that will happen.
Right. I do think, though, that here's what I think. First of all, the overcompensation happens, whether it's on purpose or not. The evidence is that if you watch the NFL, it's a common tactic that a guy will line up for a field goal, and right before he kicks the ball, the coach will call timeout. He kicks the ball, and he makes it, but it's a little, like, it's not down the center. It's a little to the right. So, of course, he lines up the kick again. He kicks it, and he misses left because he attempted to just tweak it a little bit so that it's down the center versus a little off to the right. And then he misses the field goal. It happens frequently enough that this is something that happens, what, every Sunday football's played? So,
well, sure, but they're not the same judges. The only judge who's returning from the first fight, I think it's Moretti,
yeah, it
had Moretti. had 115 and 113. He had the least controversial scorecard of all. And so I think it's kind of it's a tough comparison to make to say that that's going to be the case because, I mean, it's not even the same people.
Right. The thing that I'm going to say is that I think that the judges in this fight, so like we better hope it's not a close fight. Because if it's a close fight, what I think is going to happen is that the judges are going to have confusing scorecards where we're going to have 1-7-5, another 7-5, and a 114-114, which would be accurate in a close fight. But I think we will see no bias in swing rounds. And basically, swing rounds are going to go basically, okay, if there's three rounds even, whoever got the last one isn't going to get the next one. And it's going to lead to really close cards. Even if at the end of the fight, so like the first Ward Kovalev fight, which some people are going to scream and shout about, but you know, Ward won the fight, and people are pissed off that all the swing rounds they perceive went to Ward or whatever. Okay, fine. But I think I'm not going to go into this actually because this is just opening up a can of worms that we don't really want to address. And we both feel the same way about that fight, but I just think the cars are going to be close, even if they don't necessarily need to be. If there's a few swing rounds, they're going to just be distributed evenly so that at the end of the day, no one can turn in a really bad card. And that's not to say it's like a bad thing. If there are a lot of swing rounds, who's to say you should give them all to one fighter? If that's the case, then that's how you end up with Bird's card. I think if you ask Bird, I don't know if anybody's interviewed her, but if you ask Bird, she wouldn't say, oh yeah, I just saw that as like a clear, like that Canelo schooled him. I don't think she'd say that. She'd probably say it was a close fight, but Canelo got the swing rounds. And we don't necessarily want that, I don't think at least. Maybe if Golovkin had gotten all the swing rounds, some people would feel better about that card than say they do when Canelo got it. I don't know. But I don't think that we're going to see any, like, we certainly won't see anything stupid. I think that's fair to say. I think these guys are going to be on their best behavior. I think they're going to make sure that if it's a close fight, they're not going to be the one that's sticking out with some crazy 119-109 card. And these guys have been around a long time. They both rate as three good judges from all of my research. Something we haven't addressed so far, and it's kind of like not been prevalent in a lot of the coverage that I've seen, is like this whole knee surgery thing. Canelo had a knee procedure, back in April? Do you think
I think it was right after he pulled out of the fight. So,
do you think that's going to play any sort of factor in this rematch?
I think it could. If it limits his mobility, but I think one of the big deficits in his game from the first fight was lack of mobility. So at least with his feet, I think his slow footwork, if he had faster feet, I think he could have probably won the fight a lot easier or made the fight a lot easier on himself. And so I think actually if he has improved foot speed from hopefully having the knee surgery, having a beneficial effect, then I mean certainly it could have an effect, because I think he has fast enough hands and good enough defense. And Golovkin in the first fight, he didn't throw with Canelo so much. I think that was probably true of both of them, but in particular Golovkin did not throw with Canelo enough. When Canelo would throw fast, his fast hands in combination, Golovkin oftentimes would go into a defensive mode or just eat the punches. And so if the knee surgery has a beneficial effect, if it does improve along with not only the knee surgery, but along with his training and coming in maybe a little leaner, carrying his weight a little bit differently, being a little bit lighter on his feet, if that's the case, I think that could definitely, without a doubt, help Canelo execute a game plan that would make winning the fight easier.
Yeah, I think one more thing about that, like knee surgery not being a bad thing, but being actually a good thing, is what if, just consider for a second, but what if a lot of Canelo's stamina problems have to do with him not being able to tolerate road work, him not being able to do the necessary running that you need to do to have stamina to go 12 rounds? What if he's been able to do running the way he's never done before? What if he's been able to do the things that he needs to do to build stamina? That's one way to look at the knee surgery, and especially if you're a Canelo fan, and not be like, oh, wow, this could be like, this is the reason or a justification as to why he's going to lose the fight. Not necessarily so. In baseball, you get Tommy John surgery and you come back and you throw harder than you have before. Surgery's not meant to, you know, make you worse. It's meant to at least bring you back to who you were before. Naturally, there's some injuries that you don't come back from, like a torn Achilles, but that's not what Canelo's done here. Judging by the length of when the surgery happened and his resuming of what I would consider a top level athletic conditioning and work that he's doing, you know, to train for a freaking pay-per-view fight, he probably had an arthroscopic surgery. He scraped out some stuff, that's like standard stuff. You can come back from that in like a month or two. It's not the biggest deal.
Yeah, even the timing of it. I mean, if the drug test didn't happen how it did, Canelo would have fought on May 5th. So the fact that he got surgery, like, whatever, April 20th, is the only thing that means is that he had a little problem that he would have fought through, that he decided to get fixed because he knew that he was going to have the next 6 months to train.
Right.
And so it was only going to be beneficial to him. The timing of it makes it impossible for it to have been something that was a serious impediment to how he performed before, or how limiting his potential.
Well, assuming he's like a normal person, he could be stupid and was just like, I'm not fighting here. I'm going to make my money, whether it hurts me or not. I don't think we can rule that out. We've certainly seen guys get into the ring injured with broken hands. I think we just saw Kenny Porter was saying that Sean Porter's hand broke and he was fighting with a broken hand. Maybe. I don't know if I believe that, but we've heard it before that dudes go into the ring injured. Most famously recently is probably Sergio Martinez in the Miguel Cotto fight. I mean, Sergio can, you know, keep saying that he just got caught cold. I'm not buying it. But the other side of the knee surgery is he might not be recovered. It might have not went as well. It might be for something, you know, the lack of recovery and how quickly he's rushing back into this, or he's just not used to being on it. He doesn't trust his knee. There's something you see in the NBA a lot where guys get injured, and especially if it's like an injury that's basically like they're doing normal stuff. Like, oh yeah, just driving to the basket. No one touched me. I went up, came down, and I felt a pop in my knee. And like those guys go, they have surgery, they do their physical therapy, they come back, and it's like they're not the same person because mentally they don't trust their body anymore. And is there a possibility that maybe Canelo's got to deal with that? That's also possible. And this is a big thing, at least in the NBA, with guys who have injuries like this. That having that trust to put weight on your knee and move the way you did before, if you've never been injured before, I imagine that it's really difficult to imagine how that works. Like, oh yes, if it's fixed, you know, you feel fine, then go just do what you're normally doing. But mentally, it's hard to do that when your trust in yourself has just been broken. And I think that could be at play. I don't, this isn't something that I'm like weighing heading into the fight. Like, this isn't my concern. Do you have any concern? Like, is that something that you're like going to be, well, not looking for, because I think both of us would be looking for it. But is this something that you're considering when you weigh how these two guys are going to perform on Saturday?
If I was just like narrowing down like the top five factors that I think will play into the outcome, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be on that. I'm only cognizant of it for the possibility that it may have a visible impact, kind of like you said, looking out for it, but not necessarily expecting it. And it's certainly, I mean, it's relevant to know and to mention on the record and have it in people's minds so that if it does have an impact, it will be like immediately recognized or it'll be digested. And so that we'll really know a true version of what happened in there. We won't be kind of left in the dark like we are sometimes with some injuries or some factors that affect the fight. Like like you were mentioning, if a fighter has something happen in camp, like a death of a family member or whatever the case may be, or that Scott Quigg when he came in and said that he couldn't run because he broke his foot or whatever. That's why he came in super heavy for that fight. It's like sometimes there are things that happen in camp that we don't learn about until afterwards. And so then as we're watching the fight, it's difficult to digest what we're really seeing. And so for that reason, I think it's worth bringing up, but I don't foresee it being a big factor. No.
Every time you think that you're smart, you just realize you're a mark. It's a quote from Hulk Hogan. I swear, I listened to it today. He's like, you know, I've been in the business a long time, but I still have moments where I realize I'm the biggest mark out there. True quote.
It's a quote that probably applies to life if you really understand them.
It does. And that's what I'm talking about right here. If I could just break it down a little bit, you know, you and me right now, we're talking and we think we know what we're talking about. And we've laid out some really good cases here. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've at least heard one thing. If you haven't, you probably should stop listening. But I'm sure you've heard at least one thing where you're like, yeah, I agree with that. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. And you add that into your arsenal of things that you'll say. Maybe you'll say a version of what you heard here to your friend or whatever. But we think we know. We're talking and we think we know. But what we mean by you think you're smart, you think you've been, you know, smartened up, and then you realize, oh, Golovkin sprained his ankle pretty badly in sparring a week out. And so he can't move that much. He's not putting pressure. And on fight night, you don't account for that. You don't know about that. And so you think, you attribute, you know, Canelo's success, or we can say it the other way around, Golovkin's success, whoever got, you know, Golovkin's, you know, someone dies, whatever. And then we, you know, we're like, oh yeah. Then you look for your reasons as to what you said before or what you see in the fight. Well, Canelo's clearly, the knee surgery worked because he moved faster and he was able to hurt Golovkin and then, you know, corner him or vice versa. The knee surgery, he wasn't recovered from it, and it's why he couldn't escape Golovkin's pressuring and stalking, and that's why he got stopped. And then you realize, well, one of these guys was hurt like a week out and they kept it quiet. And then you just realize you're a mark. You don't really know what you're talking about.
The other great example would be people who bought Antonio Margarito's power punching as a real thing. And then
yeah.
And then a couple years later, we all find out that we were a bunch of marks.
Could we also say that how about
we got worked
in the situation of Antonio Margarito, the doctors who approved him to get a boxing license after having major surgery on his eye, and then he goes and gets beat by Miguel Cotto in a fight that he wasn't boxing horribly, but his face physically couldn't take the punishment. And it's like, that doctor's a mark forever approving him to fight, when anyone with a brain watching the 24/7 knew this guy probably shouldn't be fighting. That doesn't look right. He looks like the guy from Boardwalk Empire.
That's a great reference. And a great show. I love that show.
I never got past like season two and a half. Like two and a half seasons.
The best season is season one or two, so okay. You watch the best part for sure.
Yeah, season one is cool.
It's all good though. It's worth watching through the end if you do like it a lot. You saw the best parts of it.
So this is a what other shows on HBO would you recommend?
Well, the two most obvious ones would be The Wire and Sopranos. Those are two of the best shows I think that I've seen.
And what about Vice News? What about Insecure? What about Last Week Tonight with John Oliver? What about The Shop? These are some of the great selections that you could get over at HBOGO.com. This podcast sponsored by HBO. Be sure to order Canelo versus Golovkin live on pay-per-view this... I'm just kidding.
Insecure is good, though. That's a real recommendation for anyone listening. You should watch it.
My girlfriend watches this show. I just can't bring myself to watch it.
Hey, bro, you should. You should give it a shot.
I'm trying to get through Ozark. I watched one episode of season two. I watched season one. Season one is cool. Did you watch that show?
I can't watch a show with Jason Bateman that is like a serious show.
You know what? I know what you're talking about, but he does pretty well because he plays the same character as he does in Arrested Development, except this time things are way, like, the people around him aren't funny. So he's literally the same person. The people just aren't funny around him.
Yeah, I've heard enough people that I trust their opinions that said it's good, that I believe that it's good. I just haven't brought myself to watch it yet.
You know why I watch it, though.
I can't say I do know.
Oh, we've had this conversation before. Think there's a lack of buzz around the fight? And if there is, why?
I definitely think that there's a lack of buzz.
Like, and it's not because you ain't eight beers deep.
Lack of buzz.
Why?
What's that?
And I said, not because you're not eight beers deep either.
Oh, no. No, that is not the cause of the lack of buzz. It's the lack of alcohol. Well, I mean, there's probably a lot of reasons for it. I think, first and foremost, because there really hasn't been like an overt promotion for the fight. Like, I think it's pretty clear that Canelo doesn't give a shit about promoting this fight, like basically out of spite.
As I said long time ago on the podcast.
Yes, yes, you did, absolutely. And basically that's left, because Golovkin can promote a fight if he has something to play off of, but like Golovkin himself is not interesting enough to sell, especially not in this case when he's like not doing his good boy act. So basically the only person that's trying to promote the fight is literally the most annoying person in the entire like mix of characters, and that's Abel Sanchez.
It's like Boardwalk Empire, and it's a good show. I enjoyed season one. Season two is all right. Steve Buscemi is not the kind of guy that people sign up for an HBO subscription for. You know, he's not. And instead of him as the main character in Boardwalk Empire promoting the show, it's like the annoying character. Maybe the guy who plays Rothstein, I think it is. He's pretty annoying. It's been a while since I've watched the show, though. But, I mean, I totally agree with you. Like, Abel Sanchez is the most annoying character here. I mean, the Reynosos can't really speak English that well, so they're not going to do anything. And Canelo just doesn't care anyway. And Golovkin is not that guy. You cannot build around Golovkin, not on this level. You can build around Golovkin for like an HBO World Championship boxing card, but you're not building a pay-per-view on him. He doesn't speak English well enough. He doesn't know how, like, this is why Freddie Roach sold fights from Manny Pacquiao. And Freddie wasn't like, I mean, look, I got annoyed with Freddie too. But he wasn't like this. Freddie always came off as the tough guy. Like, you know, they'll knock everybody out and they don't care about anything. And what we've gotten from Abel is I'm going to say it. They've acted like divas. And rather than drawing attention, because I think what their intention was they wanted to build it up that they're very upset and they want to knock Canelo out. And they're doing everything that they can to knock Canelo out. But what we've actually seen is complaints about national anthems, complaints about gloves. We've seen videos about hand wraps. We've seen things like that. And that's not the stuff you should be talking about. We've seen, stuff. Oh, we're going to release a video of Oscar De La Hoya getting knocked out and say, this is how we're going to end Canelo. I mean, it's closer. For sure, that's closer. But it doesn't come off at the same way that it had when Freddie Roach did it. Is you think that's fair?
Yeah, as far as that element of why it lacks a little buzz, I think that's a fair take.
What else do you have? Because I think you have a list.
Yeah, it's not like a written down list, but I do have a few different reasons. Another one being that the spot at HBO Boxing is at is the lowest point it's ever been at. And R.I.P. so, well, yeah, even, I mean, 12 months ago, HBO Boxing was in a terrible spot as well. But they had the biggest show the week before. I mean, Superfly, what it was. I mean, it's not a real HBO Championship Boxing event, but it was something that people tuned in for. And the name brand value of HBO Boxing was still the most prevalent one in the sport. And I think they've done serious damage to their relevancy just on the casual fan's mind over the last 12 months by having basically no involvement with boxing whatsoever. I think most casual fans recognize ESPN and Showtime at least as being networks that show boxing. I'm not even sure, other than just purely nostalgia, people really are aware of HBO Boxing as a brand, like a current brand, not just a nostalgic brand. And they haven't put their resources, HBO themselves, haven't put, I mean, obviously Canelo and his camp, I don't think have put the same amount of effort and resources into promoting this fight. But HBO itself, I don't think has put as much effort into promoting this fight when it comes down to like ancillary programming or putting advertising or sponsorships on other relevant programming, either on HBO or outside of HBO.
Other networks, sister networks.
Yeah, their ability to push, and it may just be because this is where they're at as a division of their company. They just don't have the same stroke that they used to have, or at one point they did have, and like this is what you get when you diminish your relevance and diminish your relevance both within the world, sporting world, and within your company. You don't have the same ability to push things. Your ability to push both narratives and push like products and interest, it diminishes. And I think that's definitely an element of the lack of buzz, or like the seeming like just lack of promotion of this fight.
Right. I want to make...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I just want to make something clear, okay? This is kind of like a little disclaimer. Don't get mad about what he's saying about HBO, okay? First of all, it's all a fact. HBO is in a poor position. The Superfly card that's supposed to be... So last year, heading into the Canelo-Golovkin fight, what we had was one of the most exciting cards of the year, where Quadras and Estrada had a fun fight. We saw the debut of Inoue, who is now a pound-for-pound talent in the sport of boxing. And we had one of the most, I don't know if it's shocking is the right word, but one of the most talked-about endings of a fight, of any fight on HBO that year. But HBO is in this position now where we're coming off of the lowest-rated HBO card ever. And I want to make this clear that we're not trying to pick on HBO. If you think we're trying to pick on HBO, what you think we're doing is we're kicking them while they're down. Like, this is unintentional. Like, they're trying their best, and they've just found themselves in this position. And that could be true, but it also could be true that this is by choice, that they've allocated the budget elsewhere, that they've seen that the return on Game of Thrones and Rollins' favorite show, Insecure, is better than boxing. And if that's the case, you can't hate on them. They're doing what they can with what they've got, and this is it. Too bad. Okay? But you can't get mad. We're not trying to put HBO down. Not at all. Okay? That only implies that they're doing this like they're not doing this on purpose. It could be on purpose. I'll give them that.
Well, absolutely. But even like, it's not even just about like Superfly. Like, look at the relevant fights that HBO had last year as a network. They had Golovkin-Jacobs, which is the most relevant fight in the actual division that you could make, regardless of the success or non-success it had on pay-per-view. It was relevant. They had over 1 million pay-per-view sales on Canelo and Chavez Jr. And immediately that dovetailed into the initial promotional push for Canelo and Golovkin. What have we had since then? We had like the most disinterested just joke of the second biggest draw on HBO fight with the what ended up being Golovkin and Vannis on May 5th. You had Kovalev get knocked out, and I mean, as we're learning today, Kovalev's the rematch they turned down their option on, and it's going to end up on ESPN. They weren't even able to get the second biggest draw of their Superfly series returned for their Superfly card, and therefore did the lowest rating I've ever seen on HBO. It's like, I don't mean to kick HBO when they're down. HBO is actively taking a lesser interest as a network and company in boxing. And so, like, I'm not blaming Jim Lampley for this. I'm not blaming Max Kellerman or even Peter Nelson. The people that
you run should blame company, Peter Nelson, but go on.
Well, okay. I can blame him for not being persuasive or having enough influence
for being a jabroni as a network executive. Go on.
Yeah, sure. But point being is, like, this is not about HBO bashing. This is about HBO failing themselves and me just being honest about what happened.
Right. But that has an impact, okay? You laid out why it has an impact. And if we can just go a little bit further or just kind of like supplement that, there's a boxing podcast that I believe is by like a lawyer or something, and he was involved in boxing somehow. I can't remember. I've tried to listen to it, and the audio quality is horrible, really bad. Like, even our first episode wasn't this bad. And but essentially, I think it was Tim Smith or whatever, they talked about how like HBO's, you know, they're supposed to, when they do a pay-per-view, like they work backwards and they have a bunch of cards, which they have cards specifically to build the pay-per-view. And if you think about it, that makes sense. Like every week or every other week, if you have a card on, you can air the promos for the fight. You can, while you're talking about the fight, you can throw it back to the pay-per-view. You can have them talk about the pay-per-view and build interest so that every single person who watches that fight, whether it's the same people every week or it's a different group every single week, they can have the pay-per-view sold to them. If you want to see how this is done in a very dramatic way, watch WWE programming. Listen to their commentators. They sell their events almost every single segment and every single week, so that when they get to the event, they can actually, you know, get buys, or what they're interested in is subscriptions into their network. You could not sell subscriptions if you didn't have a weekly show in their regard, or, you know, a couple cards a month that are building towards the pay-per-view. It makes absolute sense. And if you couple that with the other venues or avenues that you could take to sell pay-per-views, you know, that leads to success. I mean, look, Floyd Mayweather sold a lot of pay-per-views. It wasn't because he was just popular and everyone knew his name, but there was a lot of work that went in that either he directly did or the network set up for him to benefit in that way. But obviously, it's not just him. The network benefits as well, because, you know, they get money from a pay-per-view being successful as well. But what we're seeing now is HBO is not even taking the steps so that the pay-per-view could be successful for themselves, not just the fighters, but for themselves. That shows you what they probably the future that they see in boxing.
Just to pivot off of the HBO point, unless you have something else to add.
No, go on. I have another HBO thing, but you might say the same thing.
No, go ahead then.
I was going to say this. We're on a tangent here, but you might as well throw this out here. We've talked in the past in the podcast. I don't think you're the one specifically who was on, but we basically talked about how very likely HBO is positioning themselves as basically an pay-per-view platform. They have the best production values. Well, judging by their Twitter post today, this is not true anymore. They released a pathetic GIF with the worst graphics that I've ever seen HBO put out. But they put out this horrible thing. But, you know, traditionally, great commentary, great production values, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe they don't want to be invested in buying fights and having to do a lot of work to build up the programming. Instead, they want it to be just the pay-per-view platform and air pay-per-view fights only. Okay, fine. But if from what we're seeing, if that's the case, they're going to be horrible at it, because they need the programming. They need people to consistently be watching HBO fights and give HBO the respect that they deserve. And that's not happening at all. And so as far as like, should they be a pay-per-view platform only at this point? So at least we have them around in some regard. The answer is no, because they can't sell the pay-per-view. Now we could, again, back to the, we're all marks in the end. This pay-per-view could do really well and we'll just be jabroni marks here. But I don't,
it's absolutely possible.
I don't think it's going to happen.
It could be possible.
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
All we can do is speak about, I think we're both in agreement on some level that there's a lack of buzz. And I could just speak anecdotally. I haven't seen it on other sports programming discussed in the way that it was last year. And part of that might even be there was the Mayweather-McGregor fight that immediately after that, networks were used to and had basically the information right there in front of them as to what an event like that could generate for as far as like fan interest and clicks and whatever. And so then immediately that could be basically the Canelo Golovkin discussion may have actually kind of ridden that wave and been able to kind of fit in the same lane as far as like having a wider net of these different types of platforms, whether it's ESPN or whether it's sports radio talk, or whether it's like YouTube interviews, or whether it's non-sports radio, whether it's just like talk radio, or not talk radio, but you know what I mean? Like when they have the morning shows or whatever on like Breakfast Club or whatever.
Shout out to God.
Yeah, Angela, well, I don't know. But yeah, that there was a tangible buzz that existed outside of just boxing that, I mean, it was noticeable. And just anecdotally, like, yeah, I live in the Midwest. I'm not really under a boxing hotbed or anything like that. I don't have like large Mexican fan base in my community where I can kind of gauge the interest, because I'm sure that it's there. I'm sure that it's there within the Mexican community and with the Mexican boxing fans, and maybe like Southern California or Las Vegas. But I'm sure that there are some people listening to this that think we are just out of the loop. But all I can tell you is that I had I can barely count it on two hands, people that were interested in this pay-per-view and watching this pay-per-view and ordering this pay-per-view a year ago. And none of those people are talking to me this year about that. And so I think that has to have some relevance in how well it's doing.
Yeah, this is a real good point. Okay. So I was going to bring up the same thing. Mayweather-McGregor. The conversation a year ago was, is this fight going to hurt the Canelo versus Golovkin fight? And it turns out that it helped it. And here's my evidence, or it's not evidence, it's actually just my theory on why it helped it. So networks can track everything. They can track who's watching at any point. They can track like the interest per, I guess you could say, segment or whatever. And I think what we saw is that Mayweather-McGregor was a topic. When that came up, interests increase. People's ears peaked up. I think that's a term or a phrase. But, you know, generally people got interested. So then they realized, oh, well, Canelo Golovkin's a big fight coming up. Well, we can focus on that. We can talk about that. And see if we could ride the wave. And, you know, maybe boxing is way more popular than we're giving it credit for. What's my evidence for this? So Max Kellerman used to do a show here in LA every day, 3 to 7. He was on the air with Marcellus Wiley, and I live in LA, so it's Lakers all the time. And because it's Max, I love Max. I listen to every single day. I listen to the podcast when I couldn't catch it live. And occasionally, they talk about the Dodgers, they talk about other things, they talk about music. But every so often, a caller would call in and ask a boxing-related question, or there'd be something boxing-related in the news that they talk about. And that segment, it seemed like, from what I learned later, is that anytime that came up, the phone lines would get filled up because people called and wanted to talk boxing. And so I remember there was one episode where they mentioned that, like, the producer came on and told them on the air, like, hey, you know, the lines are filled up anytime you guys mention boxing. And then they were like, oh, we should talk about boxing more often. Makes sense. You know, I live in LA. Most people who listen to the show are from LA. And we have a big boxing fan base here. And it turns out it overlaps with people who like the Lakers. But anyway, the point I'm making here is that they looked at that. I'm guessing that they looked at that. They realized, oh, hey, boxing's turns out pretty interesting for in terms of getting people to watch or listen to ESPN Radio or whatever. And they would do it. Another, I guess, thing about the lack of buzz is like Mayweather McGregor, Mayweather Pacquiao, the press conferences were broadcasted on ESPN, on ESPN Radio. They interrupted ESPN News. They covered the fights. And maybe they're not doing that because Top Rank says, well, we don't have any shot at these two guys. So who cares? We don't need to tell ESPN to air anything related to this fight. And ESPN doesn't see any gain that they can have from this. That's one possible reason why there's a lack of buzz. And I'm not blaming Top Rank, by the way. Not blaming Top Rank, okay? If you listen to this, I'm not blaming Top Rank. But it's possible that there's a lack of buzz. I mean, the other thing is maybe we've just heard too much. Maybe there's just too much talking, you know? We basically had from when did they sign the fight? In February? From February to now of promotion for this fight. Maybe we're just a little exhausted. Maybe we don't need to hear another quote from Oscar De La Hoya, Eric Gomez, Abel Sanchez. We do not need to hear them anymore. If Canelo was talking, maybe things would be a little interesting, but he's talking enough that we don't need to hear him either. We don't need to hear Golovkin. We just can you guys just fight now? I think that's what it mostly is that we've heard enough. We've talked about it over and over and over. Rollins, you know that I spent months talking about this every single day on a podcast. And I'm done. I for the last month, I have not talked about this fight purposely because I'm just tired of talking about it. I've said everything there is to say. Even when I thought about doing this podcast, I was like, what am I going to say that I haven't already said about the fight? Now, I thought of some questions, some things that we haven't really addressed in the past. And, you know, I think I'm pretty proud of what we've got and what we've said so far and what we're going to say. But, you know, I just think that's mostly what the buzz is about, the lack of buzz. What do you think about that? This is the last thing, by the way. We're going to move on.
Yeah, I think it overcooking it, over-marinating it, whatever.
Yeah, I like how you turned Oscar's phrase on him.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if it had happened in May, that's one thing, but delaying it, how it got delayed, and just the pettiness and lack of interest, it's not an interesting storyline, or at least it's not anymore. So, yeah, I think fatigue is definitely
that's
huge.
The word I was looking for.
Perhaps the most important factor in lack of buzz.
In a couple of words, should this pay-per-view tank? We're talking less than 1 million buys. I think while you and I know that even if you're less than 1 million buys, it's still pretty good for you, like you're still making money. But the public perception, of course, would be a failure if it was under 1 million buys. So let's just say it came in under 1 million buys. What do you think, in just a few words, is going to be the reason that people would say that's why this didn't do so well? So I'm not saying what you think. I'm asking what you think the public would say.
What
are they going to be talking about in Discord?
Yeah, when you're asking the question, I was thinking about what my answer would be. There's a good possibility it depends on the outcome. Because if the PED story is still a main story, I think that people would probably find a way to pin it on Canelo's PED thing. Or if Golovkin comes out of it looking bad, people might blame it on Golovkin's lack of like fan base or lack of ability to sell a fight. I would personally, my opinion would be, it would just be overall fatigue and or lack of promotion by the people who needed to promote it, aka Canelo not caring if it did well.
Yeah, I totally agree with your personal view. I think the public thing is going to be the drugs test. Doesn't matter who wins the fight. I think there's enough. I mean, just you really think about it like objectively. Take the name Canelo out. Take the name Golovkin out. A drug test that, it's like how baseball almost died in 1919 or in the wake of the 1919 scandal when it turned out that the White Sox had fixed the World Series. It just hurt the credibility. Is that the word I'm looking for? The credibility mm-hmm. of the sport? I think the integrity of the sport. I think that really would be the cause, whether Canelo wins or not. I wonder.
I don't think that they would even announce the number. You won't hear a number for months, and then they'll announce the number at like 1 million, and every inside source will say that that's not true. So even if it does under 1 million, I doubt that will truly be reported anyways.
I feel like you're taking a dig at Dave Meltzer right now.
Oh, no, not at all. It's happened before.
Yeah, it's happened quite a bit in the past. Let's see. Do you think that Golovkin and his quote-unquote anger is going to have any bearing on the fight at all? And what I mean is, like, Golovkin seems to be taking this personal, very upset about the drug test result and all that stuff. Do you think this is going to change the way this fight plays out or how Golovkin fights on Saturday?
I think if it does, it won't be in the style of fighting. So I think his focus is going to be on winning. And so I think he's a good enough athlete and experienced enough person in the sport that he's going to take the best route to victory, the best route to victory, regardless of whether, I mean, he's not going to go recklessly try to knock him out unless he thinks that that's the best strategy to win. You could say that maybe if it becomes like a war and he walks through the fire and like is hurt or something and like ends up winning, maybe he really did want to win or something. Maybe like the will to win is more, but I think that's also kind of just like a cliche because realistically any professional boxer at this level has not gotten there because they don't want to win. You know, everyone wants to win.
No, I definitely think there are boxers that don't want to win. I'm being sarcastic. But the flip side to that is that the anger could lead him to be a little more reckless than he would normally be, and he could find himself trapped or gassing out because he tried to knock him out too early, et cetera. There's a lot of reasons why that could backfire. Most popularly or most famously, the moment of anger backfiring is the Amir Khan who fought Danny Garcia. Amir Khan was told not to come out and try to knock Garcia out. He came out and basically tried his hardest to overwhelm Garcia and put up, you know, teach him a lesson, and then he got knocked out.
I thought you were going to stop when you just said Amir Khan, because you couldn't talk about his whole career as essentially being that, fighting with his heart and not his head.
There's a Skype joke in there, but I'm not clever enough for it. The last thing we'll get on is there any chance that Golovkin's decline has lined up perfectly with the date of this fight? And who that would benefit, of course, is Canelo.
Well, it's certainly possible, because I think if the argument would be 12 months ago, it didn't quite line up perfectly because most people thought Golovkin won, or at very least it was draw, and at the very least Canelo got a draw, so he didn't win. So if we're gonna say it lines up perfectly, if he beats him and Golovkin doesn't look like the same guy he was 12 months ago, of course that narrative will come out, and it certainly could be true. I think it would be a little bit of a cop-out, but at the same time, that's boxing. It's really, it's like the conversation that we had about the Spence Crawford thing. It's like you can pick apart from one side or the other mm-hmm. any victory or any career or any storyline or in boxing, because there are so few data points that we actually get true information from that you can always come to whatever conclusion you want and then go backward to justify it. And there's almost always a way to do it.
Right. Especially in boxing.
Because of how many, yeah, because there are so many different factors in boxing. It's not like you change one thing or you know, there's one different pitcher that comes in, and, or there's one different like guy who comes in the lineup or whatever. It's like, there's a zillion factors into who wins boxing matches, and at most you're going to have 40 or 50 of them in a career, and at the top level maybe 15. So you can kind of the storyline or whatever conclusion you want to come to, you can very often come to that conclusion regardless of what the facts are.
Yeah,
it's even impossible to really determine it. So you just have to make your own subjective opinion. And I think it's reasonable that reasonable people can disagree about their subjective conclusions. And that's where you get the fanboy arguments, is that they think your opinion is correct, when in reality it's just a subjective view of what happened, what the events that transpired were.
Yeah, that's the thing with boxing, is that you could literally argue any way you want, and you'll be right. There's no concrete data points other than win or loss on BoxRec. And even then, people will go and break that apart. I mean, you could take a look at a guy like Amnat Ruhnrong, or no, Kazuto Ioka, who just fought on HBO, which you probably don't know because he didn't watch, like many boxing fans. And Ioka was probably hyped up on the card, and Ioka was probably looked very good, especially for a guy who's come off a couple years being off from the ring. But you could go through his resume and say, like, well, you know, he lost to Ruhnrong. But you could also say, hey, that fight was not what it seems, because one of the scorecards was for him, and they scored it by a lot. So, you know, you could just do things like that. And I think bringing it back to the initial question of, is there a chance that Golovkin's decline has lined up perfectly, meaning that has he aged? I think there's, like, at every point in his career from here on out, I mean, maybe from a couple of years ago on out, that time is approaching steadily. And it may. It very well may. But whether or not you use that as an excuse or use that as justification for why he lost the fight might be a disservice, might be disrespectful. Sergio Martinez did not want people to take credit away from Miguel Cotto because he was injured. To this day, I said this earlier, Sergio Martinez to this day would say that he was perfectly fine for that fight and Miguel Cotto won fair and square. And all we have is who you are in the moment. And I think if Canelo wins, he won the fight. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to bring up all the other things. I'm not going to look at Golovkin's age. I'm not going to look at anything like that, because he beat the Golovkin that he had in front of him. The Golovkin from a year ago is gone. The Golovkin from 3 years ago is gone. And that Golovkin from 3 years ago will never fight Canelo. The Golovkin from 5 years ago will never have gotten a chance to move down to 154 and fight Floyd Mayweather. It just ain't happening. And so all we've got is the two guys that we have at the moment, in the stage that they're at, with the injuries that they have, at the age they're at, and they're going to fight on Saturday. And all we can do is judge how they fight on Saturday night. And anything else, bringing up injuries, age, is fun to do in a conversation as a hypothetical. But Saturday night, we're just going to find out who's the best between the two. You have anything else you want to say, Rollins?
No, not particularly.
Okay,
we've covered quite a bit.
We have. And so, I mean, did you talk yourself into being a little more excited for the fight?
In some ways, probably. I probably have talked myself into being more excited when the fight card is starting, you know, when we're really truly there.
Yeah.
But talking for over an hour about it, it's kind of just brought me back to the feeling of, we don't need to talk about it anymore. Let's just get it on, you know?
Yeah. The reason why I asked that is because, you know, maybe by talking about it and now saying some things and putting some stuff out there, now you got a little skin in the game. Now you got people that might be adding you on Sunday morning saying, hey, that was a real good take, you were right, or the reverse. And the more common one is that you're an idiot and I can't believe you said such and such. But we'll find out on Sunday. So thanks for coming on. I hope you guys enjoyed this. I hope we were fair to both guys, and you know, I hope it didn't look like we were biased towards one or the other. That wasn't the point of this podcast. I think I speak for both of us when boxing isn't black and white. There are two sides to everything, and it's so easy to you know, just pick one side and ignore the other. But it's also really easy to look at both sides and see the justification on either side. And so that's what we've done. I appreciate you listening. Follow us on all the social media stuff, because we've got a lot of stuff coming up for the fight this weekend, post-fight. I'm thinking of doing a pre-fight show. Again, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but, you know, at least I'll be in the Discord pre-fight, post-fight. I don't know what was planned, but I do want to do some special things for the fight. Thanks for listening, and we will be back.